Well, to go further into the conversation this morning, we would like to welcome to Freedom 106.5 FM our very esteemed guest. He has been with us many times on here and just wanted to bring him in the conversation. He is Dr. Claudius Fergus. He is a historian. And we had a discussion on this before. Good morning and welcome. How are you?
Good morning.
Yes, good morning. So coming into the conversation now, after we've been through the historical changes and the historical meaning of why we've changed from Columbus's three ships to the steel pan, how are you feeling now hearing the comments that the final production will be pushed off to 2030?
Well, I missed the earlier part of the conversation, so I can just presume that that was thoroughly dealt with. Well, let us say, I personally, and I believe I can speak for Crossroads Freedom Project as well, we are not surprised that such a decision had been taken, because there was by the UNC, if you remember, with respect to the with which, and the process as well by which the decision was taken to the emblem, to change the coat of arms, no real consultation as such. It was just an ad hoc decision that was taken. We don't even know if there was prior discussion among the cabinet, just an announcement by the former prime minister.
Dr. Fergus, your connection is... I'm sorry, Dr. Fergus, you may have to repeat what you just said. The connection just broke for a minute, so we lost you.
Okay, well, that might be, it is a problem I've been having for quite some time. I don't know if it is my device or if it is the games that are being played now with respect to the radar jamming and all of that, but I've been having these, you know, brief 2-3 seconds interruptions almost continuously.
Let's work with it.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
What I'm saying is that the process was flawed by which the decision was taken. That was flawed. And we were concerned, I speak for myself, and I'm also speaking on behalf of Crossroads Freedom Project, that only the ships were addressed, because the ships were not the only colonialist.
Okay, we lost you again, Dr. Fergus. All right, so we've lost connection on it. We're going to take a break.
What's being done, because we don't know if this is going to be put into cold storage. The decision to delay the final final layout and so on might be a good thing. That would give us a new opportunity to address the entirety of the coat of arms, come up with a better coat of arms that reflects our national identity and sovereignty. So it might be a good thing in the long run. It might very well be a good thing. My concern is why 2031? Because it took quite a short time between August and January for there to be a finalization of that decision, and perhaps a draft of the insignia of the coat of arms was already available to the public. So why now 5 years to come up with either the final implementation, because we are not hearing what they are going to do. What is the real status of the coat of arms? Is it being put into cold storage? Is it being reviewed? Is there a team that would be instituted to review, you know, consisting of artists? You need a historian in there in order to get capture the proper context and so on. Is there a team being put together or considered to review and redesign the coat of arms? I don't know if there has been a decision made and pronouncement, but I am not aware of any. But as far as I'm concerned, I do not know what is the real status of the coat of arms and why so far into the future, 2031. But I think it gives us an opportunity to do a more revision of the coat of arms and to get rid of all the colonial insignia and motifs, because the Trinidad and Tobago coat of arms, to me, is the most colonized coat of arms, even with the removal of the three ships. It remained the most colonial and colonized coat of arms within CARICOM itself.
So just to key you in, we lost you a little bit with the distinguishing the other items on the coat of arms that are related to colonialism. You stated that the ships are not the only symbols that should be addressed. We missed a little bit. I don't know if you did itemize the others that you're concerned about. Can you mention them? And I understand the question of putting the process of changing the coat of arms, as you say, into cold storage. Is it that we... because the population at this point in time really think that this is not an issue that we should be addressing at this point in time. It doesn't seem to be that important. You know, from the perspective of the Freedom Project, can you address as to how really important this is to understand, especially seeing as we are putting it off that amount of time that we may forget? So how can we continue to put it into the forefront to remind citizens about the importance of changing it?
Well, I should perhaps also mention that the coat of arms was not the only concern we had in terms of, you know, the colonization of our identity. But we have had a thorough public consultation with respect to a lot of the colonial monument signage and all of that. A report was submitted in February. We do not know what is the status of that report either. So that alongside the coat of arms, we have another serious concern. What is the position with respect to the report on public monuments, signage, and so on? We do not know. The government needs to come clean. We know it was not submitted to the current regime, but to me, government is government, and the report is in the hands of the government. We need that report to be made public so that it can be addressed thoroughly, and we also need action, because a lot of effort was put into that committee, and the consultations and the report. We have not seen that report as a public. We have not seen it. We need to see the report, and we need action on that report as well. So back to the coat of arms. I did not mention the specifics, but you also have the crown, the helm or the crown, which represented the queen at the time, and we can see now it represents the king of England. The mantle of the crest is also there. You have the shield itself, the shield which is the core of most of these former colonial relics, the coat of arms. Most of them are built around the shield. The shield represents medieval militarism, and which would have progressed into the imperial age. So this represents an aspect of our civilization that we reject. As you know, there's a campaign building up about zone of peace, yet our coat of arms is built around militarism. The coat of arms is built around the shield. The shield represents medieval militarism, and we need to address that as well. The Trinity Hills that they try to capture, that is also unhistorical, it's mythical, and it does not really identify anything historical about Trinidad and Tobago. That those three hills representing not Trinidad and Tobago, but representing the myth of Christopher Columbus sighting Trinidad and naming Trinidad after those three hills, which is a lie because the name for Trinidad was already determined before Columbus left Spain for his third voyage. So that too needs to be revised. Not that hills are not appropriate because, you know, a lot of the Caribbean, the major, the dominant feature of the landscapes are hills. But to put the three hills is to really capture the myth of Columbus sighting of Trinidad and naming Trinidad, you know, after the Holy Trinity as such. So those are just some of the elements there that we need to address. And then if you look at the entirety of the Code of Isles, there's nothing there that captures the indigenous experience, the indigenous presence, you know, and I think a Code of Isles in a place where the foundation of colonialism was built on the genocide, the blood of the indigenous people, something needs to be done there to represent the indigenous people. The wheel, that ship's wheel at the top, just below the palm, what looks like a palm tree. Mm. The wheel cannot capture anything like, let's say, a native canoe, because they didn't use wheels to navigate. And to me, that wheel is an aspect of the conquest, symbolism of conquest, because the region was conquered by people coming in with ships. And therefore, to put it at the very top there represents a celebration of European conquest. And there's nothing symbolic about the indigenous people in the Code of Arms as well. Mm.
So the opportunity to hold off on the implementation of the final reproduction of the coat of arms as it stands present, it's, you've seen it as a plus to really sit down and have a more in-depth conversation on the points that you just brought up in terms of lack of representation from all sectors, because that has been part of the conversation as well. It seems that, okay, why not put on other instruments and just, you know, not only the steel pan, because we've got other indigenous instruments as well. Representation of the indigenous persons, as you said, other groups, religious groups, otherwise, the other aspects of Trinidad and Tobago that make us a cosmopolitan space. How do persons who are interested in seeing what should go into the coat of arms, how do they send in their ideas or their drawings if they want to go as far?
Well, that's for the government to decide. I do not know if their objective is really to look at the thing again. You know, as I said, a committee perhaps needs to be established. Mm-hmm. And that committee need to be comprised of artists, obviously, you know, perhaps specialists in heraldic art, because the coat of arms is about heraldry. And also, you know, people who understand the history of this region and the history of both islands, thoroughly informed about the history of the two islands. You need people like that on a committee. And if you are intent on really producing a symbol, a coat of arms that reflect the history, the people, the landscape of Trinidad and Tobago, and it could not just be that you change the ships alone. You can't, and just put a steel pan is I think it's a beautiful and beautifully located in the center as well. But, you know, there's been competing calls for, I believe it's a tabla. I might be wrong about that, but definitely a musical instrument of the in the of the indents that came in as indented. Now, a lot of people object to that. I don't. Mm. I don't. Because this region, our history has been built on struggle. Culture was the center that drove our struggle. And just as the steel pan is relevant, the drum, the African drum, could also have been a very powerful symbol of our struggle, both in terms of physical resistance, because the drum was very important in our physical resistance, mm-hmm. but as cultural resistance as well. We refused to abandon the drum in spite of all the legislation banning it, you know, and punishments for people who played the drum and who were associated with the drum and so on. The steel pan emerged in Trinidad and nowhere else, largely because Trinidad was the only place in where you had an oil industry. And the drum was associated with the oil industry first, before it became a steel pan instrument. Mm-hmm. But you had African instruments that survived, like the balafon, for example, of West Africa, from which I believe the inspiration for the steel pan came, and not just Tambubambu, as some people would allege. Mm-hmm. Of course, some of those things might be controversial. Because the balafon also used two sticks. It could get notes, you know, similar sounding notes like the steel pan as well, except it wasn't on steel. And so the two-stick idea for playing the musical instrument could have been indigenous to West Africa as well. So the music is part of our cultural resistance, it's part of our resistance as a people, part of our survival techniques and strategies to use music. And so if the Indians who came in as indented want to see themselves reflected in the coat of arms, I don't see a problem. I really don't. And if, I'm not saying the tabla should be the instrument, but I don't see why they ought not to be represented on the coat of arms. They were one of the major groups of people that were exploited under forced labor in the colonial regime to keep the colonial system going, and therefore that struggle should be represented in the coat of arms as well. So there's really need for, you know, discussion, for concessions by different groups and so on, with respect to coming up with an authentic coat of arms that reflect our sovereignty as a people. But just to mention your point about, you know, whether the time is opportune or not to engage in this kind of discussion, there's some people that always say that. Even now, our sovereignty is being threatened, and some people are not concerned at all. Mm. Right? When you look at the public response to the call for, you know, the vigils and so on, you'll see that there is apparently a majority of people, if you judge from the people who came out, that might, well, what the heck? I mean, there's so many more important things to talk about rather than our sovereignty. Mm. But why do we talk about nationhood and you can't talk about nationhood and exclude sovereignty? Yeah. This is the foundation of our nationhood. Mm-hmm. And there are two things that identify a nation. It's flag and its coat of arms. And if we are saying that the coat of arms was more colonial and colonized and sovereign and independent, we need to do something about it. We should have done something about it decades ago. Mm-hmm. And if we choose now to do something about it, I think understand that the time is appropriate. In spite of all the struggles you have to go through, those struggles are not going to be diminished if you don't focus on the code of arms.
Or address it at this point in time.
It has nothing to do. They're two completely different sets of issues. Mm-hmm. One is about your sovereignty. How do you represent your sovereignty? How do you represent it? Mm-hmm. How do you decolonize your symbols? That should be an ongoing aspect of independence. Decolonization was not intended to be a one-off event in 1962, August 31st. It's an ongoing process. August 31st, 1962 was the beginning of that decolonization process. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we started with a wrong coat of arms that was too colonized. That was part of the compromise for independence, you know. Mm-hmm. It's one of the problems when you negotiate independence. When you look at the coat of arms we had during the Federation period, Melissa, it's less colonial than the one we have now. It's amazing when you look at that coat of arms. It is less colonial than the one we have now. So we eliminated a colonial emblem to come up with one that was even more colonial in its representation. Something had to be wrong.
I have some comments.
You need to address it.
I have some comments coming in based on the discussion we're having right now. Some people are saying, good morning, listening to your program. I agree with the nation that changes to the coat of arms is not needed at this time. More pressing things to address. Another one on the same number says, Rowley, PNM wanted to change the coat of arms so they could milk the treasury. Now they are gone. No changes necessary. I can't comment on that. I mean, you see, these are the kind of comments that kind of misdirect the conversation, as you stated earlier, on actually understanding our identity, fighting for that sense of sovereignty that you spoke of, especially in a climate that we're in right now, and the identities, not only of Trinidad and Tobago, you mentioned this as well, which was an interesting point, that compared to others, in CARICOM, our coat of arms seemed to be more representing or a stronger representation of the colonialism that you're speaking of, to actually challenge it now to bring it to another level. It is an interesting discussion and one that needs to be had as it, you know, represents how we see ourselves moving away from the identity that has been placed on us through colonialism. Another message says here, Tassa and the Dantal, Shak from the First Peoples, those should be represented as well. Another person is asking, are we going to be able to use the old polymer money? And of course, all of these questions coming in, which are valid, because you're talking about an entire change to the items that represent governance. How do we constructively go about the conversation so that there isn't a overwhelm of information as you're seeing how many instruments supposed to be added and where to put it and so on? How do we structure the conversation?
Well, there are two aspects involved with this. So one is the reforming of the coat of arms, that is, the completion of the decolonizing of the coat of arms, that's one thing. And the other is the rollout. How much time do you need to roll it out? Mm-hmm. That's a decision the government has to take, because ultimately it's the government that would stand the cost of the rollout and would determine, you know, priority areas for the rollout, whether it would be government agencies, whether it would be the money, that the money could perhaps wait a little, maybe embassies, you know, overseas embassies and so on. You have to determine the rollout. You know, what emblem are you going to put at the airports as people arrive? One of the first places they're going to see when they arrive. You know, the government has to determine the priorities in terms of the rollout. But where is the suspension of the rollout? As I said, I hope it's not putting it in cold storage so that people would forget after, you know, 5 years. Because you can never tell government strategies sometimes. But I am looking at the more positive side, that it gives the country an opportunity to revisit the coat of arms and to complete the process that Dr. Rowley was brave enough to start, because it took a lot of courage to do that, you know, because there are lots of forces in this country that insist we must remain with these colonial symbolisms. There are lots of powerful forces we are aware of, you know. The Trinity Cross was changed, Melissa. That was a very controversial aspect as well. It was highly controversial because largely, I mean, we have to admit, it pitted two religious groups together.
Yeah.
The Hindu and the Roman Catholic in particular, right? Not just Christian, but Roman Catholic. Two very powerful religious organizations representing a tremendous amount of people in the country. And yet they were able to resolve the issue because a committee was put up. Professor Emerita Bridget Burton was in charge, and she would have handled that very well to come up with recommendations that would have gotten a few continuing, like, nostalgic resistance from the Roman Catholics, but everything petered down after a while, and now we are comfortable with the new coat of arms, with the new Trinity Cross symbolism. I envisioned something similar would happen to, or should have happened to, the coat of arms, the opposition to it. I see it as necessary. You know, we live in a democratic society where comments such as that, which you read out there, they're necessary. You understand how people feel, but you know where that is coming from. Our education system has been essentially and fundamentally a colonialist education system. Mm-hmm. So if people think in defense of colonial values, it is understandable where it's coming from. You cannot condemn people for that. Our education system is another thing that should be continually decolonized until we get to where we want to, so that people wouldn't be no longer thinking about that, things like that, in that way.
Yeah,
I understand that. That's not a problem. We need to hear those voices as well.
Yeah.
So we cannot shut them down. We need to hear all voices.
We've got about 4 more minutes to 10 o'clock, and I've just realized that I see, is it Mr. Shabaka Kambon joining us here? Is he?
Hi, sister. How are you?
I am
good. Morning. Special greetings to your listeners and, of course, to Dr. Fergus, man.
I do apologize. I do see that you've joined the conversation, so we can go beyond 10 o'clock on it, because I would love to hear your positioning on it as well, Mr. Cambon, on, you know, the timing of stalling it, timing of discussing now that there may, as the doctor said, there are other elements that we have to address in the coat of arms that still represent some sort of representation of colonization, and how we address it. Some good points coming in as well. The school system, you know, all of those things we need to touch on. I just want to take a short break, and when we come back, we will get into the conversation and go beyond 10 o'clock. This is The Human Impact, the conversation on the delay on the changes of the coat of arms. You think it's important, or you think we're making, as one caller said earlier this morning, much ado about nothing? We'll be right back. Welcome back, TNT. We're inside the second hour of The Human Impact on Freedom 106.5 FM. And if you're just joining us, we are debating how important the changes to the coat of arms, or the postponement of the changes to the coat of arms, is really in the current space of all conversations right now. And of course, the world climate, and understanding what it really means to make these changes. And would like to welcome Mr. Shabaka Cambon as well to the conversation. Of course, we have Dr. Fergus with us talking on the history of why these changes are so important, and understanding how we need to let go of that colonial past. So welcome, Mr. Cambon. How are you doing?
Hello, Melissa, and special greetings to your listeners.
Well, it's Tusker. Melissa is the producer. It's Tusker.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
That's all right. That's okay. So I know within the Christmas season, as I said, we get a little distracted as to what the issues are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it comes with being Trini as well. You know, we kind of want to forget the tough issues. Now, the understanding the cost of the changes to the original coat of arms to what it would be, the former prime minister says it would not cost hundreds of millions of dollars. Our finance minister is saying that, you know, we have decided to retain the old coat of arms, and that transition period will be saving us money. And persons are wondering, oh God, what's the point? It's just something, it's just an emblem. You know, it ain't really all that much of an issue. What's your position on it?
Well, I'm sure Dr. Fergus would have explained, you know, in detail. He would have taken apart the various elements of the coat of arms, from the Tobago palm to the golden helmet facing forward, which represents Queen Elizabeth and one of the British colonial symbols of Tobago, and of course. You know that we became a republic in 1970s, and of course, therefore, that golden helmet would be, if not anything else, anachronistic. Then he would have talked about the three ships and the three hills.
And the shield itself.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, there are a number of things, but I mean, I suppose the most egregious are the three ships and the three hills, because of what they represent. And of course, the three ships, represent the, and this is the official version, the discovery of the islands. And discovery, of course, is a perverse euphemism for the genocidal invasion and occupation of the Caribbean. And of course, but it doesn't just mean that. It means, it celebrates an imperialist view of history on the whole, which rationalizes the expansion of empire, justifying the subjugation and exploitation of indigenous peoples and their lands across the world, and frames the protagonists of these crimes, these great crimes, as heroes and agents of progress and civilization. So our coat of arms does not simply celebrate the genocidal invasion and occupation of the Caribbean, but an entire imperialist view of history. And I'm sure Dr. Fergus would have covered those things. So it is a very shameful symbol. And of course, if we know anything about these heraldic symbols, they're meant to reify the history and values and ideals of a people. They're meant to be the ultimate icon of that brings all the people in a nation together, the symbol that represents them. And of course, this symbol, Dr. Fergus and I have argued, does not represent us. I think what was important, the important where you all were in the, where you all were at in the discussion, was understanding the error. I would say that was made by the former prime minister in terms of how he addressed the issue. A type of error which I think is endemic to the way that the PNM does things in general, that party, and perhaps even more so to that particular prime minister himself, and perhaps was one of the reasons he lost the election. You know, the failure to understand how important the people are as you advance the society, how important it is to engage the public, how important it is to, that the people understand what is going on around them, that they are not simply the victims of colonial epistemic violence, but they gain the information they would need to overcome it. You know, we saw that not just with the coat of arms, but we saw it as well when they dealt with the hair issue. You know, the hair issue in Trinidad and Tobago was another issue that we worked on for decades. You know, we in the Emancipation Support Committee, and then joined later on by the Caribbean Freedom Project. And how did the PNM deal with that issue? The Minister of Education made an announcement that, they wanted to bring our policies in line with new trends. We're talking about discrimination against an entire segment of the society, hair discrimination, something, again, we inherited from the colonial period, like the coat of arms. And rather than educate people about the issues that we had been raising for 20 plus years, the government decides to change the regulations. They refuse to invite any of the principals from the Emancipation Support Committee or the Caribbean Freedom Project to their consultations. They come up with something that was no match for the cultural reality of the society. They change the regulations and they end up with, to a large extent, chaos. And a lot of teachers and parents are not happy with the outcome today. And of course, they separate the issue from its historical context. And rather than the society advancing to understand the dangers of chemically processed hair to the reproductive system and how we ended up in a society where African hair was deemed to be inappropriate and unkempt and in its natural state, not ready for the workplace and so on. How we ended up with these rules, instead of explaining those things so the society could make one step forward, they pass some basic regulations that schools are allowed to break, and that students can interpret in all kinds of strange ways. And and so they've advanced things in a certain way, but nowhere near what the people who champion these changes would have wanted. It's the same thing with the coat of arms. It's a way of doing business. They have not, up to now, we were the ones in 2020, Dr. Fergus and I, petitioned Parliament. It's on the Hansard to have these changes made. Up to now, the Prime Minister's never Dr. Rowley never invited us to have a meeting. He had a letter from us on his desk. In the same way that we were treated by the Prime Minister at that time, the Minister of Education treated us when they were dealing with the hair issue. So it's a way, it's a modus operandi for the party that we hope that they would learn from if they expect to find themselves back in office in this country. And I think that's where we were at when I entered the conversation.
So basically, instead of looking at it as a section of society that is not willing to have the discussions, how can we bridge the gap? Because that's one of the questions that I asked Dr. Fergus. If it is that you were interested in entering this conversation or putting designs or putting suggestions as to how this emblem that would be representing our country from this period to generations and generations beyond, way after we've left this space, how do we create the space for that positive conversation so that it would not be as jarring as it seems to some? Because many persons are saying, this is not an issue. Why are we talking about this? It makes no sense. It's going to save us millions. And I'm thinking, too, from the promises and policies that have been put forward by the administrations, the previous one and this one, you know, to find the revenue is more of a question in their minds. And if it is that not doing this change to the coat of arms going to save us millions, probably can be put in those other places. I still want to figure out how we're going to set the stage for a constructive conversation about how we should be represented from today and beyond. How do we do that?
My sister, let me just say this. In the 1970s, when places like the Country Club were openly discriminating against Indians and Africans, and that issue was raised, many persons felt that it was a non-issue. They said, this is not important. This is the way things are. Leave them the way they are. Mm-hmm. You know, don't go to those places if you are black or brown. Don't go to those places if you're African and Indian. Go to your own places. That was the way that was treated. In 1997, when the majority of nightclubs in this country were openly discriminated against Indians and Africans, and we raised the issue, people said that's not an important issue. They have other things that are more important for people to deal with, mm-hmm. right? When we said that the hair issue was a problem starting in the early 80s, that the way that that the fact that girls couldn't go to school with their naturals and boys were being asked to cut their hair, African boys were being asked to cut their hair in ways that Indians and Europeans weren't being asked to cut their hair. At that time, Indians were also being discriminated against because Indian girls with their long hair were being asked to cut them because, when their hair was long and straight and in one plait, it was a place that they said would hold lice. and things like that. So when those issues were raised, people said it wasn't important. People's understanding of what is people can only understand what is important based on what they are privy to in terms of information. If you don't understand what the symbols mean on the coat of arms, and I'm telling you, I'm meeting people on the streets all the time, and the way that Dr. Rowley did his change, he gave people the impression that the change was really about, nationalism, patriotism. If we want to celebrate the pan, we should celebrate the pan and use the coat of arms, celebrate the pan. He did not explain to people that these were, symbols that spoke to genocide, that this our thing was a reification of the invasion and genocidal occupation of the Caribbean. It was a celebration of the decimation of the indigenous people and the enslavement and indentureship and so on that followed. He didn't explain those things to people. And so people still think it's an aesthetic change. And do we like a man telling me, well, I prefer the way it look. This is the kind of talk that his approach engendered. It's the same problem, as I said, which was engendered by the approach taken by his Minister of Education with the hair issue. And similar approaches that don't give people, don't respect the people enough to engage them in a wholesome and healthy conversation.
Mm-hmm. Do you think I know Dr. Firth highlighted it very briefly, the school system that exists right now, and you said the absence of knowledge as to what these things really represent. How can we introduce those things into conversation so that persons can understand why it is such a big deal to many sectors of the society, not just one, but many sectors?
How do we introduce the issue of educational reform in terms of content?
And because for you to refer to, persons who say that they like how it look and not aware of what each of these symbols mean, because coming from the point of art has a way of using symbols and different things to represent meanings by sight. And if it is that you're not aware of what these symbols represent and what they mean, they can go over your head, as you said. You said that some persons just like the way it looks but doesn't understand the complete meaning of what each symbol means. How do we go about educating persons on, how the pictures are used and symbols are used?
Well, you see, the problem of content curricular reform is a deeper problem which has been recognized across the Caribbean, and real genuine efforts have been made to change, to advance our curriculum, to make it relevant to Caribbean people, to stop it from disrespecting and undermining the equality that and justice that we say we want. And of course, we know that there are forces in the region that work tirelessly to thwart those forces of progress. And that's another discussion. But this particular issue here needed, and any country, if you think about how insane we went about changing our coat of arms without a national conversation, without the requisite education. Where's the material produced by the government about the change in the coat of arms that you could pick up at, government stores and so government institutions and so on? You go into the, where that you could go and pick up at Nalis that kids could pick up and read about the change. It's absurd. No country would take its most important symbol, change it because entities, people like myself and Dr. Fergus and others pointed out that it is problematic and they are aware of the problem and not address it in an appropriate manner. How we did it was absurd, totally absurd. And we have to take responsibility. Even the institutions like the National Library, the University of the West Indies, the COSTAT, all the tertiary level institutions, they should have all been involved.
All the think tanks of Trinidad and Tobago.
Of course, to inform people about the importance of the change.
So would you say
none of those things have been done? Uh-huh. Listen, let me put it to you this way. Since that change, I have traveled almost, I've been out of the country more than I've been in this country since the change. People have invited me all over the world to come and talk about what we've done in Trinidad and Tobago, to discuss how they could implement similar measures, because, of course, Columbus veneration is something that is prominent across the Americas and problematic wherever it is prominent.
Mm-hmm.
And so people who are struggling to end the open glorification of this symbol of genocide and so on, have invited me to come and talk about what we've achieved in Trinidad and Tobago, but I've never been asked to engage in that conversation in Trinidad and Tobago itself.
Mm. So the movement forward in resolving this issue where both sides, those who are for and those who are against the changes, for whatever reason, to come together to find a common space as the national anthem says, find an equal place, every race, find an equal place, to be represented. How soon do you think it can happen? And do you agree with Dr. Fugas that maybe hoping that the agenda of the current administration is not to put it on storage and have people forget about it, to actually use the time to create something that really represents us? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't equate, and I think Dr. Fergus might agree with me on this, I don't equate the people who make the change, who have advised on the change, with those who don't want the change. This not wanting the change represents, unfortunately, not understanding the world and where we're at this particular moment. So that's really an unfortunate situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about, the change has already been made. It's not about hearing them out anymore. That is past. It's about educating people to bring them on board. And let me just put this into a global context for you, right? You would have heard about something called the Black Lives Matter movement around 2019, 2020,
mm-hmm.
after
mm-hmm.
the murder of George Floyd.
Mm-hmm. And Trayvon Martin, yeah.
And for most people, that movement was a movement of what they would consider to be people of African descent, up in arms against, discrimination, police brutality against people who look like you and I and Dr. Fergus. But there's a much deeper, that was about something even much more profound that affected the 9/10 of the globe's population. And so that Black Lives Matter movement, what it did, it started with African Americans, no doubt about it, because they were in an acute system of oppression in the United States of America. They experienced acute forms of discrimination in the United States of America. And they would have turned on the monuments, the public icons that celebrate or venerate the people, the architects of that system in which they were suffering. But the Black Lives Matter movement retraced lines of colonial violence all across the world to places where many people in Trinidad would say, hey, that's a white person, right? So you take Greenland, all down in the Torres Island Straits in Indonesia, India, New Zealand,
yeah.
Chile. You had a Black Lives Matter movement everywhere. Some places where they had no African people, no people of African descent.
Nepal because as well,
Correct. It was about, the blackness that was created by colonialism, the division between a first-class citizen of the world, and Bob Marley says we refuse to be second-class citizens of the world. That and the second classness that was created by being the native in the colonial process, right? So blackness equated to being the native in the colonial process, and that would have been 9/10 of the world, right? And so everywhere you had that colonial violence, you had a Black Lives Matter movement, because people were living and experiencing blackness in those places, regardless of the color of their skin. And so in that movement, there was a clear global consensus that celebrating the icons of the historic crimes of colonialism was not something that the world was prepared to continue. And of course, what the natives of the world, the blacks of the world, argued consistently across every country of the globe was that there was already a consensus that if you had committed crimes against humanity, if you had committed grave crimes, you could not be honored and celebrated. That consensus was there, and they asked, why wasn't that consensus, why wasn't that consensus applied to people who had done horrendous acts and deeds, to people who were non-white, for people who were colonized? And that, and once you could answer that question, it's very easy to understand how Columbus's three ships, the Trinity Hills and so on, don't belong on any national symbol of a country like ours that does not celebrate the values that he represents. You know, why do you think so many people in Trinidad and Tobago don't want to participate with the United States of America in an attack on Venezuela? We don't like imperialism. We don't like it. We don't like war. Mm-hmm. We're going to celebrate genocide on our coat of arms? No. And once we understand that we're celebrating genocide, the value system of our people will reject it. We will vomit it up. And so, unfortunately, many of our people don't understand that that's what we're celebrating.
Mr. Campbell and Dr. Fergus, I would like to thank you so much for taking the time to explore this conversation again, and probably to encourage persons to really delve deeper into what it really means to remove these items off of the symbols of our country, and to step into a conversation that is deeper rooted in identity, sovereignty, and to understand what brought us to this point. Dr. Fergus, by chance, do you have any last comments you'd like to share?
I want to say that I agree with my brother there that, while we listen to opposing voices, those voices are mainly tell us how important our education, reform of education, is at this point in time. And let me just conclude with this. The colonizing forces in the region, first starting with conquest and then those who established the plantation system, all operated from getting seals of authority to conquer, seals of authority to colonize. Symbols of power and sovereignty, therefore, are very important to the process of overturning these power relationships. So that the flag and the coat of arms, very instrumental as symbols of where we are as independent nations, must be a priority to us. And as Shabaka said, we cannot entertain the symbols that speak to the genocide of this region, the enslavement of the people of this region. We cannot accept that. And just to close, we have an opportunity now again to ensure that what is right is done to the reform of this important symbol of power. We have an opportunity, and therefore we need to thank the government for putting this thing on hold so that we can revisit it, put a committee together. This is my way forward. We do not need consultation. Again, there's been a massive consultation already. As I said, the report is with the government. We need a committee that would address these things and have people who can contribute to a new design make their input, whether coming into the committee, submitting nationally. You know, you can send perhaps designs, drafts, and so on. There could be a competition for a new design. Whatever they decide, there should be a new committee that would look at these things, come up with one design, make recommendations to the government, and let's move forward from there. The cost involved should never be a factor in this. Our sovereignty is too important to put a price money on it.
Well, Dr. Fergus and Mr. Cambon, thank you so much again. And I'm sure with you on the mission to keep it in the forefront and in the public eye, I'm sure that we won't forget. So the amount of time that they may put it on the shelf for, I know that you all will be hard at work at reminding us that it is that is necessary to be done.
Very important. What you are doing today, Melissa, is what we want other stations to do because the government needs to hear.
Thank you so much.
What you are doing is perhaps more important than what we are doing because our voices would be magnified through your station and other stations like yours.
Thank you so much, Dr. Fergus. Mr. Cambon?
Thank you for having me. And again, you know, remember that coat of arms is a source of ridicule for us. Other people know that it demonstrates that we do not have the capacity to understand our past to other people and they make fun of us. Hmm. We can't continue with that old coat of arms for sure.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. And we'll see you again. We'll touch base again. Take care.
Take care, my friend.
Bye-bye.